debaters. Welcome to Rock On Debate, a one-clap speech and debate source for quick tips, hacks, resources, and rock and support to help inspire and assist debaters. I'm your host, Lyle Wiley, a high school English teacher and speech and debate coach in Thermopolis, Wyoming. Yo, PFers, I have at least 230 reasons for you to check out today's episode. I mean, maybe not really, but today, Matt Liu, the director of debate at the University of Wyoming, is here to walk us through the January Public Forum resolution, which is the United States federal government should repeal Section 230 of the Communications Decency Act. Matt Liu has a master's degree in communication studies from Wake Forest University and over 20 years of experience in competitive debate. Before joining the University of Wyoming staff, he coached multiple national championships in college debate at the University of Minnesota, Wake Forest University, and Liberty University. He has also coached multiple national championships at the high school level while working at the Harker School, New Trier, and Bronx Science. While in college, he won and was top speaker at the American Debate Association National Championship and was a quarterfinalist at the National Debate Tournament. Matt has some wise thoughts about the resolution that I think will be useful to orient PF coaches and debaters, so let's get into it. The January 2024 PF Topic Analysis with Matt Liu.
Hello, folks. My name is Matt Liu, and I'm the Director of Debate at the University of Wyoming. This is going to be my topic analysis for the 2024 January Public Forum topic, Section 230. So, resolved. The United States federal government should repeal Section 230 of the Communications Decency Act. In short, Section 230 provides immunity for online computer services with respect to third-party content generated by its users. Okay, translation, Facebook et al. Cannot get sued for almost all content that is shared by its users. Section 230 was part of the Communications Decency Act, the rest of which was tossed out by the courts as unconstitutional. And ironically, the rest of the law was like very anti-speech, very anti-internet, and Section 230 was a last-ditch amendment by two representatives in the House to try and preserve some idea of the burgeoning internet because they were very tech-friendly. So, what kinds of things might folks sue over if Section 230 was repealed? Democrats argue that Section 230 allows hate speech and misinformation to go unchallenged. Conservatives argue that Section 230 provides platforms immunity for ideological biases. The GOP loves to argue that big tech platforms have a liberal bias, so that might influence elections. I should note, by the way, if you're a reader and not a listener, if that's your learning style, Wyoming Debate Roundup, wyomdebateroundup.weebly.com, actually yodebateroundup.weebly.com, has a nearly identical article version of this, and so I'm sure Lyle will link to that, and you can check it out. It's important to note that there are already some exceptions to Section 230. Providers are required to remove material that's legal on a federal level, so material that engages in privacy violations, copyright infringement, and as a result of the FOSTA-SESTA law, material that violates any federal or state sex trafficking laws is also excepted from Section 230's immunity. But I want to talk origin story. Section 230 has its origin in a pair of lawsuits in the early 90s that motivated Congress to act in this area. The first, Cubby Inc. versus CompuServe Inc., the courts held that Cubby could not be held liable for the actions of users because the company wasn't doing anything bad, the users were. In the second, Stratton Oakmont versus Prodigy Services, the courts came to the opposite conclusion, holding that because Prodigy moderated forum posts, they were responsible for user-generated content. And this led to the conclusion that any content moderation made a company liable for all user-generated content. But like no content moderation, no liability. In response, Congress introduced Section 230 in 1996. Now, Senator, then Representative Ron Wyden argued that Section 230, his amendment, was a sword and a shield for companies, allowing them to have protection from lawsuits, shield, but also to moderate their websites as they see fit, sword. This origin story is quite a bit more important than you think, because it might inform what the world would look like after a repeal of Section 230. So what does a world without Section 230 look like? This is a question of repeal versus reform versus replace. If a world without Section 230 looks like the world before Section 230, then companies that engage in zero content moderation will not be liable for user-generated content, Cubby. But companies that engage in any content moderation would be liable for everything their users post, Prodigy. So Would we get a wild, wild west of no content moderation? Or would all of your social media posts have to be approved by a digital cyber name? Or would it be something in between? This question is incredibly important because it determines both whether the F solves and what negative positions will look like. There are a lot of different arguments too. A lot of folks are going to argue that companies will have an economic incentive to do content moderation, because if every website and app looked like 4chan, no one would want to use them. That seems true, but if companies put themselves on the hook without Section 230, they're subjecting themselves to liability for user-generated content, they might engage in overzealous enforcement. If you're on the hook, you're going to be very careful. And the danger is that in the drive to avoid liability, companies might err towards being too cautious and restrict too much speech. It's also possible that companies will just give up on content moderation entirely. Because again, if you're on the hook for anything your users post, it's not just losing lawsuits that can be economically disruptive to your company. It's just like having them in the first place, like just the amount of litigation that you would be subject to. And folks will argue that that is especially true for smaller platforms and tech startups that can't afford to do content moderation on the scale of larger companies. And then last, I think there's an interesting debate about a shift towards more content moderation that happens by AI and through algorithms and machine learning, because that's, I think, the only way that you could do content moderation at the scale that would be acquired, right? Like think about how many tweets or X's or Facebook posts there are. That's going to take AI. That said, all of this analysis seems a little bit divorced from real-world discussions of Section 230 and definitely from the literature on the subject. Why? Because no one argues for just a repeal of Section 230. They either argue for reform or replace. There are dozens, if not hundreds, of reform and replace proposals. One of the most common is to argue that companies should have a duty of care. And this is a carrot and stick approach that would tie immunity to a reasonable standard of content moderation. In other words, the government would say to a company, are you making a good faith effort to moderate content? If yes, you get your immunity. We're not going to hold you to an impossible standard, but as long as we think you're making a good faith effort, you will have your immunity intact. I think a core topic dynamic is going to be the fight between the AF and the NEG, pro and the con, over whether or not reform or replace is AF ground or NEG ground. The AF, and yeah, I know, AF, NEG, pro, con, I'm slipping into policy or LD terminology, but hey, it's all the same. The AF can argue that the repeal of Section 230 would result in some form of replacement, but with a distinct and manageable legal regime, as repeal alone is politically untenable. So the AF wouldn't be saying we're defending replace, but we're arguing that replace is a logical result of repeal. It's a question of solvency, not a question of like what we're on face defending. The NEG will argue that anything short of repeal is neg ground and that reform is less than repeal. Whatever you think, I think you're going to have to be highly prepared to have these debates, because whichever side gets to defend reform is going to be in a very strong position. Okay, let's talk about AF ground. I think the strongest AF argument is about misinformation and how social media corrupts democracy. If you are interested in checking out the Wyoming Debate Roundup hard copy of this article, I have hyperlinked a bunch of articles and journal articles, law reviews about all this AF ground, NEG ground stuff. So chances are if I mention an argument, I've linked to an article about it, and you can check that out on the article form on Wyoming Debate Roundup. But democracy. There are a variety of different link and internal link arguments about this, including that Section 230 promotes misinformation, that it contributes to echo chambers and filter bubbles. And there are tons of ways to impact misinformation. Certainly, you can talk about the health of US democracy, but you can also talk about things like public health misinformation. That literature is super common after COVID, and that, you know, has implications for disease and pandemic response. And this is a fun debate. I think the negative has a line that they can push that vaccine misinformation is lawful, but awful. Lawful, but awful. And so legal immunities are relevant because that content isn't illegal. Like So you take Section 230 away, people can still post that like vaccines cause like bad things, but that argument, but it's not illegal. It's, to use the phrase that scholars do, lawful but awful. That argument's definitely not insurmountable by the AF, though, because there are plenty of arguments that that is illegal. And California like tried to pass a law making it illegal, but then like ran into the Section 230 hurdle. And so not only are there existing causes of action, but Section 230 prevents novel causes of action. So there are really good negative arguments about that, but there are cool AF responses too. Okay, I also think there's a local news argument. Some of the cooler stuff I've seen about Section 230 is that the blanket immunity it provides makes tech social media too powerful. And the effect of that is that it displaces traditional media, especially local news. If you haven't seen like the lovely John Oliver clips about the importance of local news, you should check it out. But there are some very strong arguments about the benefits of local news because it's the core of investigative journalism. Good impacts on its own, good internal link to democracy, good stuff to talk about there. There are lots of other areas to talk about for AF ground, but I find almost all of them to be substantially weaker. And they're going to be pretty popular. So like on the neg, you're going to have to prepare for these things with smart arguments. On the AF, you might feel tempted to talk about these things. I'm going to suggest that these are weak pro arguments. So one of them is crime, including drug crime and cartels, like and terrorism. But I think it's just unlikely that Section 230 has a meaningful impact in these areas. And that's despite the fact that terrorism has received a disproportionate attention from both media and scholars, because there's several court cases about Section 230 and terrorist propaganda. So I think it'll be very common contention, but I just don't think it'll be a very good one. Like if you think that Facebook is key to ISIS's operations, we're just like, we're not ever going to be on the same page. And so like maybe the best version of this argument is that groups like ISIS use social media for recruitment purposes, but like we bombed a school bus full of Yemeni children. At least US bombs were dropped on a school bus full of Yemeni children. As long as we're doing the things that we're doing in the Middle East, I think that's a, you know, going to make terrorist recruitment a little bit more inevitable than access to social media. As I mentioned above, the left case against Section 230 talks about hate crimes and discriminatory discourse. So you could have arguments about that, or right-wing extremism, alt-right echo chambers. There's also arguments about antitrust and monopolies, where critics say that Section 230 causes major tech company dominance. For all these reasons, or for several reasons, I kind of think that none of these, like, these are not fully developed arguments. They're kind of like, these are the weaker arguments that Section 230 haters make. And I think that you should resist the pull to get tempted by this stuff. Okay. A big AF burden is going to be figuring out what kind of solvency argument you want to make. And that means, what does content moderation look like after appeal? Because to win almost any advantage, almost any pro contention, the AF is going to need to argue that companies engage in content moderation. However, to avoid big negative offense, the AF is going to want to win that content moderation isn't overzealous. You got to be Goldilocks. You know, so how do you get the soup that's not the porridge that's not too hot and not too cold? How do you get content moderation that solves your advantage but doesn't link to negative contentions? And this gets into the repeal versus replace versus reform distinctions from above. I really think the AF is well positioned to get not just solvency, but even advantages from arguing about what comes after Section 230. And personally, I will be pushing teams to explore defending a duty of care. And that, you know, what I talked about before, right? Tying immunity to a reasonable attempt at content moderation. I think that's worth looking into. Articles linked on WDR. One last thing, one area I didn't explore is the international and extraterritorial implications of Section 230. And so the college antitrust topic was a few years ago, really, really similar to this one, a lot of related issues. In fact, we talked about 230. And it had great literature about the importance of international and, importantly, EU harmonization of policy. And I think that's true across a lot of different tech topics, is that, you know, what we do here implicates other countries. And so they would like us to think about it together with them. That might be an area to explore for AFGROUND, for NEGGROUND, and I'm also interested in how Section 230 is enforced extraterritorially, meaning how does our law affect tech companies in other countries that, you know, the internet isn't limited by borders, so like how do we enforce that here? Okay. I kind of have two sections of NEGGROUND, and the first is going to exclusively be what I'll call like the tech neg contention. Section 230 is often hailed as the 26 words that created the internet. And it's got a bunch of advocates, leftist advocates, big tech advocates, but it's big tech that has the largest vested interest in defending Section 230 because it gives them immunity from litigation. And big tech is very good at promoting its interests. Because of that, a tech or innovation negative contention is going to be a very common negative argument and not even a bad one. Okay, so on face, this is not the strongest argument, right? Like Facebook has to moderate posts, so they shut down, not buying it. Even if it's true that the scale of social media is incalculable, we all know that moderation would be algorithmic, it would be managed by AI and machine learning, and that would ease the burden. So I don't think Facebook just like collapses. And even if they did, like who cares? But there are maybe some more compelling arguments that Section 230 is useful for startups. Wyden, you know, the author of Section 230, argues that repeal will, quote, kill the little guy, the startup, the inventor, the person who is essential for a competitive marketplace. It will kill them in the crib. That's pretty good language for a negative contention. And I think centering a negative argument on startups that are more willing to experiment with new features and services, but the very ones that would be unduly burdened by Section 230, I think that seems smart. And so I also think you get to make the argument that small platforms can't survive, or at least thrive, in a world of increased litigation. And so this isn't even an argument about necessarily that they can't handle content moderation, but like they can't afford the endless lawsuits that are going to happen regardless of their ability to handle it, right? America's a company that loves to sue. So if you have to deal with that litigation, that those lawsuits alone could be enough to bog your company down. I think there's lots of good search terms: innovation, startups, economic growth, competitiveness, technological leadership, litigation, experimentation are all good things to explore this area and define the claim that being able to try new things without fear of legal repercussion is critical to innovation and allowing tech startups, smaller companies, to scale up and expand globally. Okay, but we got to talk about the impact, the implication, the significance question, the so what. There's copious literature on the benefits of startup and on the benefits of American tech innovation. The argument that Facebook likes to make when Zuck is called to testify before Congress is that keeping American tech companies strong is the only way to stay ahead of China. There's tons of literature on this claim, and it's a very popular debate argument that rears its head in any tech debate. And I think there's great arguments supporting that. There's always great articles when big tech's interests are at stake. I am a little worried there's a missing internal link. And I think the argument that I would want to see the AF make is that innovation in user-generated content is not the innovation that's important for neg impact claims. Facebook posts and tweets aren't key to beat China. It's not like tech innovation matters, but the tech innovation that Section 230 helps, maybe it's not the most important. I think both sides are going to need to flesh that out to really get a good grip on the tech DA on either side. Okay, but like if AF Coach Matt is right about that, then I think a smart negative contention, in addition to making China arcs, because I think they're good, should branch out into some more quirky impact areas. And so the better one is open internet good. I think this has a lot of advocates who write prolific and powerful articles about the benefits of unrestricted speech on the internet in the context of Section 230. And on WDR, I linked like three different articles on this. And I think they make really bold claims about what the internet can do to make society better. And they argue that it's a force multiplier to address all kinds of challenges from the small scale to the existential. Now, this can be a little goofier than the tech good beat China arc, but it has a better connection at the internal link level. Because the warrant behind open internet good is fundamentally like crowdsourcing is good. Like you need ideas from a bunch of different people. And so there's a one-to-one link to user-generated content, which is the thing that's actually at stake in Section 230. And that to me is like the biggest thing, right? Like Tech Beat China fails because like your uncle's posts on Facebook aren't key to beat China. But the open internet good people actually do say that it's the crowdsourcing effect of getting lots of different people talking that makes the internet useful. So I think that's important. I also think there's some cool arguments potentially about the digital divide. I've seen some articles that say that internet platforms will pass the cost of content moderation onto their users, which means that services that are free now can become pay to play. And while they might not cost very much, the people who are going to be excluded from that are the people with limited disposable income. And so that might meaningfully widen the digital divide. Okay. Tech is the heart of negative ground on this topic. There's definitely other things to talk about. Court clog is potentially a popular negative argument. Removing tech platforms' immunity is going to generate a flood of litigation. And court clog is the way that we see debaters argue that increased litigation is problematic, that it overwhelms the courts with new lawsuits that stops them from being able to hear other important issues in a meaningfully speedy way. This is essentially a court's trade-off dissad. And I know, in addition to AF and NAG, I'm using policy language like disadvantage or disad or DA. And in PF, especially in Wyoming, I probably should be saying contention. But again, I think it's all the same. So forgive me for a cheap court clog pun, but so sue me. Another argument that interests me is an agency trade-off disadvantage, contention. So who's going to be responsible on the government end for thinking about all these things? Could be the FTC that handles internet platform enforcement after Section 230 repeal. Could be the FCC, that's the Federal Trade Commission and the Federal Communications Commissions. And they are, you know, one of those two probably is going to be the agency that's doing this. But like, they're busy. Like the FTC under Lina Khan has been one of the most effective government agencies under the Biden administration, and it's been pursuing a quiet but meaningful antitrust revolution. So if you can win that the FTC has to spend a bunch of resources enforcing the plan and that trades off with their antitrust focus, that's an awesome negative contention. And I know it works. And I know there's tons of literature that the FTC resources are limited and that new priorities called cause trade-offs, because I've seen that done before on different tech topics. I also think there's a very good negative arguments about differential enforcement. I've seen a bunch of articles that Section 230 repeal isn't going to hurt big companies because they've got resources. But if we're policing content, if we're you know, selectively deciding that certain posts aren't allowed on the internet, well, there's always an argument that law enforcement disproportionately polices marginalized people. And I think that's just as true in this area. Somewhat related is that there's surprisingly good negative reproductive freedom cards. Like literally the best articles I've seen on this topic are arguments that red states who are criminalizing abortion and even information about how to get an abortion, in that world, if social media companies didn't have immunity in Texas and Oklahoma, are saying like posting information about how to get an abortion is illegal. That's, you know, you can litigate about that. So social media companies are going to err towards censoring all abortion content to avoid litigation in red states. And I've seen articles that say that that gives Texas control about access to reproductive information about reproductive freedom for the entire country. Now, I said before that I liked the open internet articles because it has like such a good link level connection. And I think that's true here. I think that this is an especially strong argument because the articles that talk about it get into the how and why of how enforcement would actually play out. And they have excellent warrants to say, like, this is why the tech companies, even if they didn't moderate anything else, they would definitely be overzealous in the area of reproductive rights. And so that could be a very good negative argument because the link level is so strong. I work closely with Professor Graham, and I think he would caution that you should be careful about judge adaptation issues and the red state of Wyoming when making reproductive freedom arguments. But I would say, do you, I don't care. The most common negative contention in Wyoming is going to be free speech. I'm not a fan. I don't like how the impact debate plays out. And I also think that free speech as a First Amendment concept is that the government cannot restrict your speech, but tech companies deciding what users can post on their platforms is not the government infringing speech, right? Section 230 doesn't stop government infringement of speech. It gives tech companies unlimited rights. That's different. I am okay with the negative arguing it's bad that there will be less speech after a Section 230 repeal. That's virtually all negative arguments. But I need that to be impacted with a consequentialist explanation of why that speech is important, not an abstract defense of unlimited speech. I think that's a vague and kind of vacuous argument. I also think we'll see neg teams say we should reform, not repeal. And as I said above, there'll be heated debate about whether or not this is AF ground or neg ground. And I'll be honest, I'm amused by this because PF claims to reject counterplans, but reform is so clearly a counterplan. It's just not going to be called that. You know, there's going to be a contention that's called there's better ways to fix this than repeal. And then they're going to talk about why reform is good. And that is just a counterplan in disguise. The same way that targeted student loan forgiveness won a wreck of debates on the last topic and was also clearly a counterplan. I also think there's like some really good case arguments for the negative. Like this is an unusually good topic. Well, actually, student loans was good too. But this is a good topic for case neg arguments, for arguing about your opponent's contentions. So many AF teams are just going to assume 230 repeal results in content moderation. But as discussed right after the intro, that's not necessarily the case. Rather than resulting in aggressive content moderation, companies might back off content moderation entirely. And the neg could develop a solvency argument that companies will, like Cubby Inc. before Section 230, choose to not moderate user-generated content at all. However, the neg is going to have to think carefully about their offense. Offense, defense. Offense wins debates. Like, it's so much more important. Like, defense, good. It's cool. Offense wins debates. And so if you say companies won't moderate content and your offense is about overzealous content moderation bad, you might be in trouble. But it's not entirely black and white. Whether, how, and how much companies moderate content doesn't seem like it's a question with one answer. And different platforms and different circumstances are going to adopt different approaches. And the best teams will be able to win a story of how and why enforcement happens in the context of their offense, but doesn't happen in the context of the affirmative. So imagine a debate where the pro talks disproportionately about public health moderation, and the negative reads those reproductive freedom arguments I talked about. The con could say that public health misinformation will not be moderated because it's not illegal. That no one has passed a law that says vaccine misinformation is illegal. And so companies will have no incentive to moderate it. That's a solvency takeout. But they could also read the reproductive freedom contention and say that Texas and Oklahoma are criminalizing information about how to get abortions, which means that companies will engage in content moderation over those issues. And so both on the AF and the neg, smart teams are going to have to think about how and why and whether enforcement happens. I also think the sword and shield argument, that's the Rob Wyden quote, I think that argument lends itself to some pretty strong case arguments. Remember, Section 230 isn't just immunity for user-generated content. It's immunity for voluntarily engaging in content moderation. And repealing 230 would remove the sword that allows companies to engage in whatever content moderation they want to engage in, the voluntary content moderation. And that offers an avenue for the neg to say that repeal decreases content moderation. Okay. I also think there's really, really good case-specific turns. So we've talked about like misinformation and like lawful but awful, but this could actually be offense too. There's some folks that say that because misinformation is not illegal, that type of content moderation would net decrease because some companies do engage in misinformation correction now. Some companies have already decided it's either economical or otherwise beneficial for them to do some content moderation over that. But there's a couple of reasons why they wouldn't with Section 230 repeal. One is that they'd be on the hook for content moderation without Section 230. That's the sword argument. There's also a resource trade-off argument that they will have to concentrate on the things that are actually illegal. Misinformation is not, so they won't care as much about that. There's also some very good democracy link turns. In the WDR article, I linked to someone who says that Section 230 is not just important for US speech and democracy, that it's a bedrock of international free speech, in that it has allowed political dissidents from across the globe a platform to connect and talk and to speak. And so there's some very, very good negative case arguments. Okay, that is it from me. I look forward to seeing the arguments that you produce when I inevitably judge at a few Wyoming tournaments, and I hope this was helpful.
Well, thanks so much to Matt Liu for sharing his thoughts on the new PF topic. Matt recorded his content from his blog entry on the Wyoming Debate Roundup page, and I'll be sure to link to this post in our show notes. You should totally check out the blog. It's full of great debate resources. And it's time for some shout-outs. Thank you to everyone who is a patron of One Clap Speech and Debate. Your kind gifts help me keep this show going. Special thanks to our patrons, Terry, Tina, Brenda, Aaron T., Melissa, Marcus, Laura, Londi, Ashley S., Joel, Matt, Alan, Ashley N., Arone, Izzy, and Rick. This year, maybe consider supporting One Clap Speech and Debate by checking out the Patreon page. You can partner with me on this journey for as little as $1 a month and stop patronage anytime. If you have an idea or a request for Rock On Debate, shoot me an email at lawwiley@gmail.com or reach out on the One Clap Speech and Debate website or social media linked in the show notes. Thank you so much for listening to One Clap Speech and Debate. Remember, your voice matters, and we'll catch you next time.